to The Game with John Kurtz and Mitch Fortner.
There's a county map to go with the wall of hurl, a stick in the shinty bowl, the brick, the brack, the crack, and all. Let's call it an Irish pub.
Hey! Packers are complaining about the Guinness pun, the cabbage crack, the either one of me paddy track. We'll call it an Irish pub.
I'm digging this. What is this?
This is called an Irish pub song by the Rum Jacks.
Shout out to the Rum Jacks.
Gets you in the mood.
It really does. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody. We're going to talk about the parallels between Iowa State's situation and K-State's situation. Iowa State went and hired a coach, reportedly, T.J. Otzelberg. Underwhelming to some, but to me the point is they went and got their guy at a $9 million price tag. And I want to raise the question, if K-State could go get Brad Underwood, would you not be dancing in the streets thinking that was a great move for $9 million? But let me make this statement. If the man who was walking around town on Saturday after the 10K, which I, of course, completed, Mitch, coming off of a calf injury, pat on the back for that, 54-something, 54.
Man.
I can't remember exactly.
Let's work on that time.
Well, yes, I was slow. I ran at a slower pace than I did the half marathon.
It's really not that bad, really, but okay.
Well, it's not that bad. That's a fine time. That's a damn fine time, Mitch. But there was a guy walking through Aggieville when I was sitting at Lucha on the back porch. This dude walking through Aggieville playing the bagpipes and just came back and serenaded us with the bagpipes. It was awesome. Like, I'm really not even that big of a St. Patrick's Day guy, but being actually there for, like, the festivities and the parade was about to go on and after the 10K, and I was kind of in the mood for it. And I've been kind of in the mood for it today, actually. Feel like being a cold, dreary day. I don't know why, but that feels St. Patrick's Day-y to me. So I very much appreciate that, and I really appreciated the live bagpipes. Shout out to that guy. If you know him, give him a pat on the back for me, please. So here's the thing. If T.J. Otzelberg is not a great coach, then Iowa State may well look foolish here in a few years. But I don't think you can say that they would look foolish for paying the $5.5 million buyout for Prohm, because Steve Prohm sucks. I don't think Steve Prohm is good. I don't think that was going anywhere. If you want to say they shouldn't be paying a $3 to $4 million buyout for Otzelberg, like, okay, we can debate that. I don't think it's as bad a hire as some. But the point is, Iowa State went and made their move. This was Jamie Pollard's guy. The quote from CBS Sports was that a source close to the situation said, quote, it's been done for about a month. So this was clearly who Jamie Pollard wanted to go get. He executed and he got him. So you can sit there and say all you want, like, oh, Iowa State, you just got a coach that doesn't really scare me. And he doesn't, I wouldn't say that Otzelberg scares me. You got a coach that doesn't really scare me, a crappy coach, and you wasted all this money to do it. Well, it's a little different now with the heights that Brad Underwood has risen to. But, like, you know, last year, if it were last year at the end of the year in K-State made a move, paid I think it would have been $3 million buyout at that point in time, and then whatever Brad Underwood's buyout is, I mean, you're talking about around the same price tag, $9 to $10 million, but he was your guy, like that was the guy that you needed to go get, and you identified this is the guy that we have to have. Would anybody around here be saying, like, that's ridiculous? Because I don't think anybody really would. And I think Brad Underwood's the easy way to, like, make this resonate and bring it home for everybody, because right now you'd be staring down the barrel of, like, a $7 million buyout if that were in any way a realistic possibility to go bring Brad back. And I think everybody here would gladly pay that money. And by the way, I think that would be a tremendous investment. And I think it's a chance that you have to take if you've identified, like, this is the dude that we need running our program. That price tag will pay itself off. Like, you'll make that money back in spades if you go front the money. But that is a part of the problem. College athletics is a very risky game, and you have to be willing to spend money to make money. You can't just be cheap about everything and go on the cheap with your hires. That's not really something that you can do. And when I say that I have concerns about Iowa State being fully willing to do this and K-State not, I realize it's not apples to apples. And I also realize that K-State gave Chris Klieman a very nice contract extension in the fall, which to me was indicative of being willing to step up and do what you needed to do. When at that time, it felt like to everybody, Chris Klieman was the guy. And I certainly would hope that most people are still there. But we're seeing more of that commitment since from Iowa State than we have K-State. If there were a legitimate possibility, I'll just ask you this, Mitch. If there were a legitimate possibility for Brad Underwood to be the coach, would it not be worth it 10 times over to go fork up the $2 million that it would take to fire your current coach and the $7 million that it would take to go get Brad Underwood?
Yes. For Brad Underwood, yes. For Thomas John Otzelberger, absolutely not. Not worth it to me. Brad Underwood's resume, much better than Thomas John.
Are you calling him Thomas John like to be disparaging?
Well, he's in a big boy league now. We need to think about the TJ.
Okay.
All right, he's a little bit older now. By the way, from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, he and Bruce now have a new rivalry. Who's the better Big 12 head coach from Milwaukee? I would love to have Brad. I would love to pay the money. I think it's definitely worth it because he's a one seed, by the way, right now in the NCAA tournament with Illinois. I understand a much more established program overall than K-State would be at this moment. Bruce Weber knows about that. But he is much more established. He'd be worth the money. He has proven that he's gone to more than one program and shown that he can win various different levels. No doubt about that, as an assistant and as a head coach. He's a great coach. But Otzelberger is not worth the money. I mean, good thing today is St. Patrick's Day, because if I was an Iowa State fan and heard about this hire, I would want to go drink a whole barrel of Bushmills after hearing about that. I wouldn't be happy spending all that money, buyout money, near $10 million, and you got a guy that has the third worst winning percentage in UNLV history.
Well, that's a stat. Again, pandemic year this year, he was 12-6 in the Mountain West his first year, and he was awesome at San Diego, South Dakota State before that. Okay, so again, I don't think this is that bad of a hire. Yes, he is not Brad Underwood. He's not. Yes, do I think it's too steep of a price tag in a vacuum to pay for this coach based on merit? I do. But I also think that if you are convicted that it's your guy and you have your man, that's not a price tag that should stop you. And I admire and commend Jamie Pollard for feeling that way. And I would hope and imagine that K-State would feel the same way about Underwood if that were in any way a realistic possibility. That's what I'm saying. Because if Gene Taylor were to do the same thing, I think there would be a lot of applause from around here. And I think most people, rightfully so, would say, smart investment. Smart investment. Takes money to make money. Smart investment to go do that. Pandemic or not, whatever. If he's the guy, you need to go absolutely make that happen. And Iowa State has. And if for K-State, let me spin it this way to you as well, Mitch. Like, K-State does not have as intimate of a knowledge of T.J. Otzelberger. Is it Otzelberger? Otzelberger. Now Kellis has me.
Otzelberger.
Okay, I had it right. T.J. Otzelberger. He was at Iowa State for a long time in two different stints. So they have a more intimate knowledge of him. They probably have thought this guy was going to be a star for a long time. And had just seen enough of Prohm and realized, like, hey, let me go capitalize and pounce on this. K-State didn't have that inside, in-depth, intimate knowledge of him as a coach. So he's more valuable to Iowa State because of that. He's also more valuable because he quite literally been there and been there for a long time and saw what it took to win, saw what Hoiberg did to win big at Iowa State. So I think there's more. He is more valuable, if you're thinking about it, to Iowa State than he is to K-State. Now, that's probably not worth $9 million, no. But I can see how they would be able to convince themselves of that far more than K-State would. Like, I would not advocate for K-State to go pay what would it would be like $5 or $6 million to fire Bruce Weber and hire TJ Otzelberger. Would not do that. Don't think he has the same value here, and you're spinning the wheel and playing the game there of hiring from the same type of pool of candidates that you would have here at K-State if you made the move right now. I guess I'll put it this way. Like, maybe this is the way to sum it up. Like, in a way, like, I'm jealous that Iowa State had a guy that was their guy, according to the athletic director, that he was just going to go make that move and go do it and spend big boy money to do so. I'm just jealous of seeing their whole athletic department go do that now on the football front and the basketball front. That's really it. That's what a lot of this boils down to. I am.
Yeah, I definitely want to see more money spent in the big programs, football and men's basketball. That is where you go make your money when it comes to college athletics. That's definitely true. But K-State is dumping money in facilities. That's for one. They see that as a benefit to recruiting. Has it worked out for basketball that much? Not really. But it's working out for baseball. Baseball's been big in that area. Football. I think it's just more than just money, though. You have to have the talent. You simply just have to have the talent to be a winning program. Money is one thing, but it's not the whole enchilada. All right? There's a lot of ingredients to enchiladas. And talent to make them certainly helps.
It's no enchilada without spending some money at the grocery store. Nothing without that. You gotta have that. You got to do that. We'll see, man. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens on the basketball front. We'll see what happens with Otzelberger as an actual coach. Maybe it will be. I mean, Jamie Pollard has a very mixed history of hiring coaches. He hired Hoiberg. He hired Matt Campbell, but he also hired, like, Gene Chizik and Paul Rhodes. I mean, it's very mixed. I don't know how much trust I would have necessarily in him if I were Iowa State fans right now, but it all comes back to the respect thing. I respect what they're doing. May not be right, may not be the right move. It's never guaranteed. But I respect what they're doing and the way that they're doing it. Okay. What are reasonable expectations for Deuce Vaughn this year? We'll discuss next.
You're in the game on News Radio KMAN.
We did not talk any Deuce Vaughn yesterday. He is one of the Wildcats who spoke and says this is where he can improve on what was already a freshman All-American season.
Still taking strides in the mental game, going through everything, making sure that I'm able to see more pictures and everything like that, and getting my pre-snap stuff down whenever you come out, and especially whenever you're running routes and stuff out of the backfield, making sure, hey, this may be a zone coverage, this may be a man coverage, and things like that. And then just working on my second and third level moves and things like that to take 15, 20-yard gains into 70-yard gains.
Well, I definitely like the last part there. Obviously, the first part makes a lot of sense. It's more boring, but when you tell me, hey, I'm trying to pop 15-yarders and turn them into 70-yarders, like, yes. Yes, sir. Here for that. But it's weird. Deuce has already gotten to this point where it's almost like he's boring. With the rest of the team, I was like, I saw the lineup that we were going to get yesterday to speak. And don't get me wrong, this is very much like somebody that covers the team. He's boring now because, like, we did the Deuce Vaughn thing all year last year. He spoke all the time. He was a great interview. He's incredibly thoughtful. We've been through that, and it's like, this is unfair that you have that infatuation period and then you get over it very quickly. But now it's like, oh man, we have Malik Knowles. What is he going to say about, you know, his progress right now? Been a long time since we talked to him. Skylar Thompson throwing a ball for the first time. That's very interesting. Messingham, so many questions to ask about the offense. It was like everything else. I was like excited about that. And I'm like, oh yeah, there's Deuce. You know, I mean, he's going to be excellent. Like, of course, he'll be excellent. He's such a proven commodity and such a steady guy. Like, he's just such a steady performer. And it's like, well, I need to ask questions of the offensive coordinator who has to deal with all the other clunky parts of the thing. And I have to ask questions of the receiver who's wildly inconsistent and up and down and a giant tease. And instead, I'm left with Deuce, who's just, like, consistently great. And it's like, huh, okay. You know, I mean, I listened to what he said, and it was like, all right. I don't think any of that's nothing's really driving, like, crazy social media interaction or any of that. No slight against Deuce at all. I say all of that just to set this up. and ask the question, like, what are reasonable expectations for him already? When after a freshman year in which he was not only a freshman All-American, he's also a guy that's like so consistently excellent that it's fairly boring compared to the rest of the team right now. What do we expect out of him? He had over 1,000 all-purpose yards last year in 10 games, 642 rushing yards, 434 receiving yards, 9 total touchdowns. So what are the expectations for Deuce? Because I'll give you two things. If you want a number, if we're going to put a number on it, I would expect that now playing 12 full games instead of 10, I'd say we're looking at north of 1,500 total yards here between rushing and receiving. And I'm not 100% sure how that will break down. The other thing that I would say is I would expect second team All-Big 12 running back. I don't think you're supplanting Breece Hall. That's the unfortunate thing for Deuce. If we're talking about like legitimate Big 12 accolades, and I know he's not a guy that cares a whole heck of a lot about that. But if we're talking about legitimate All-Big 12 accolades, there's too much hype surrounding Iowa State. There's too much hype surrounding Breece, and you know that he's going to get the ball a lot because, well, his quarterback's pretty overrated. So I don't think you're unseating Breece, but that's where I would drop my expectations for Deuce next year.
All right, so I'm going to give you both as well. But first of all, I do have a little bit of a problem with you, John, because for the headline story of the second hour, you put TJ Otzelberger in front of hashtag my boy, Deuce Vaughn. If you put those two on a double pan balance, just sinking to the floor is Deuce Vaughn, and flying up in the air is TJ Otzelberger. So, you know what, we'll work on that for next time. But all right.
Deuce ever been to the NCAA tournament?
I mean,
it's a joke.
What kind of joke is that? There's not even an NCAA tournament in football, John. There's a playoff of 4 teams. Anyway, by the way, ESPN did release a 64-team field if there was one for college football. K-State would be a 16 seed. All right?
Oh.
Making that 16 seed run. Okay, so back to hashtag my boy, Deuce Vaughn. Numbers. All right, so Deuce last year, combining the rushing and receiving, 1,076 yards and 12 touchdowns. A hell of a debut for a freshman. He's already loved by thousands of K-State fans, but nobody's a bigger fan than yours truly, who saw it before he even touched a pigskin. All right, looking at this year, expectations as a number, obviously you expect them to improve. He doesn't seem like a kid that's going to fall into a sophomore slump. He will pick up where he carried off last year. I fully expect that. To give you a fair number, adding on a couple of games, and maybe even assuming K-State goes to a bowl game, which I would hope they do with Skylar Thompson being back, I want a solid 1,500 yards out of Deuce Vaughn. That is rushing and receiving combined. I'm not going to split it up because of how versatile Deuce Vaughn is. All right, he's going to gain yards no matter what. Yards are yards. He's going to be productive. To give you a touchdown number with the 12 touchdowns, I'm sorry, he had 9 touchdowns last year. I'm looking at 12 touchdowns this year. You know what? Give him one a game during the regular season. That's still extremely productive. He'll have some multi-touchdown games, and he might have a slow day in there somewhere against a tougher opponent. That is not to say that he still won't be the best player on the team. And that's where I get to the overall expectations as we expect out of him as media and fans expect out of him as just a fan of the program. He needs to be the best player on the team. He needs to be the showstopper, the show stealer. He needs to be the man, because that is really how I think people already look at Deuce Vaughn, as a Darren Sproles. That is a lot to live up to, but he has the talent to do it. He's got to be the man, and I think he is going to be the man like he was last year.
And I kind of arrived at like a what I would think would be a typical progression for him after taking into account a bunch of different variables and just considering them somewhat of a wash. There is the concern always about a sophomore slump, just teams figuring you out, figuring out how to defend you. But at the same time, he's going to have, knock on wood, I mean, I'm going to knock on this table right here, that Rico Jeffers doesn't come knock Skylar Thompson's right half of his body off again, and he has a healthy, legitimate starting quarterback for an entire year. That will help a lot, not just from even a, hey, somebody that can get him the ball in the passing game standpoint, but Kellis referenced it earlier today, like times where they were like, Will Howard's making the wrong read on the read option. That's the type of thing where Skylar can excel. He's going to help put him in a better position. Also, the receivers are still not very good. At least not that they're not proven. It looks like the receiving core would be a weakness once again, so he would stand to get a lot of work catching the ball. And the tight end, I mean, they swapped out Briley Moore, who's probably going to be drafted, for Imadorbebe, who, while talented, does have a strong injury history. So there's all the chance in the world that his workload is going to be just as high, if not higher, than it was last year. Taking all of that into account, I would expect a normal progression, which I would think tacks on with two more games also. I think even saying 1,500-plus yards is relatively modest of an expectation for a jump up and an increase there. But I do think that we'll see that. And I think he's a good enough talent. I stop short of saying like Darren Sproles-like talent, but I think at the college level, he's a pretty phenomenal talent, and he's got everything that you want from a mental makeup standpoint to keep improving. And we heard it just in that clip. I mean, in that clip, like, what does he start talking about in the clip? He starts talking about, like, all the cerebral, not off the field, but, like, all the cerebral stuff.
Still taking strides in the mental game, going through everything, making sure that I'm able to see more pictures and everything like that, and getting my pre-snap stuff down whenever you come out, and especially whenever you're running routes and stuff out of the backfield, making sure, hey, this may be a zone coverage, this may be a man coverage, and things like that. And then just working on my second and third level moves and things like that to take 15, 20-yard gains into 70-yard gains.
So his head's in the right place. We've known that since day one, since the way that he came out attitude-wise, just so humble, even when things were going as incredibly well as they were for him last year. I think he will make that improvement. The one thing I would stop short of doing is projecting out the touchdowns, simply because, assuming that Skylar is back, like, that's Skylar's specialty, is like siphoning rushing touchdowns when you get inside the red zone. Didn't he have three against Oklahoma the last full game that he played? So like that's what Sky does. Not that they were just slamming the rock into Deuce every single time they got in the red zone. That wasn't totally the MO, but I think that'll take away, you know, that has the potential to take away at least 2, 3, 4 touchdowns throughout the course of a season next year, just Skylar taking those. So that's the one part that maybe, if we're talking about, like, if you were doing a, you know, if your bookie has numbers on like a future for Deuce Vaughn touchdowns next year, I would be skittish of touching that. But I think the yardage, that production will be an uptick. And I think Breece Hall is going to get it a million times. He rushed for 1,500 yards last year. He'll be your first team All Big 12 running back.
Well, my prediction of 12 touchdowns for Deuce Vaughn, that's the same pace that he would have last year. If the season continued on from 10 games and you play 12 or 13, I mean, Deuce is on pace to have 12 touchdowns on the year. The uptick is the yardage. If you divide my 1,500 by 13, assuming K-State goes to a bowl game, that's 113 yards a game. For Deuce Vaughn, I would say that many yards, if you combine rushing and receiving, is not only possible, it's also necessary for the offense to be successful. If the wide receiver core is good or not, even if the wide receiver core is better than last year, more consistent certainly, you still want Deuce out there catching passes, because he's such a weapon, especially in the slot. If you can get a nickel or even a linebacker on him, he can explode from that spot.
Let's hope that the touchdown numbers go up. It's a fair point that you make. I just, that to me, he's not a back that, he doesn't have the size where you feel great about him, like being somebody that's just going to consistently ram it into the goal line. That's, and K-State's offense hasn't really proven to be that. That's the reason for my skepticism. Let us know what you think at JL Kurtz, at the game KMAN, your expectations for Deuce this year. And our number one song of the day is next. This song only because it was a rallying cry once upon a time when our friend Brady was still around here. It was a rallying cry for Nights Out when something funny or something awesome would happen, Brady would just hit that like high falsetto part of
the Frankie Valli.
Yeah, saying, "Oh, what a night," which I imagine has to be coming up here pretty soon, right? Are we about to hit that?
The Frankie Valli part? Here it is. The singer you're hearing at first was the drummer.
Hang on.
Oh, yeah. Here, yes. Yes, you're right.
There you go. That right there. Whenever, like, you know, something awesome happens, somebody buys you a free drink or something, Brady would just yell that out. And so I don't really know anything about the song. I just brings back a lot of memories.
Well, John,
most of them at Mojo's.
From 1976, this is December 1963. Oh, What a Night by the Four Seasons, 3 weeks, and number one. Four Seasons from Newark, New Jersey. They were internationally successful in the 60s and 70s and 60s to 70s. They've also been known as Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons. Valley's the only member of the band that still is a touring part of the Four Seasons as of 2019. The Four Seasons were one of only two American bands, the other the Beach Boys, to enjoy substantial chart success before, during, and after the British invasion, a.k.a. the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, so on and so forth. The band's original lineup inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1990. They were, I mean, just huge. Their estimated record sales worldwide, 100 to 175 million. 21 studio albums. This was their last of five number ones. So this was co-written by longtime group member Bob Gaudio. So the original idea for the song was to set this in December 1933 and celebrate the end of Prohibition. But Frankie Valli and Gaudio's wife was like, who helped write the song as well, was like, nah, that just doesn't have the right vibe to it. So they decided to change up the melody a little bit, change up the lyrics, but they had to be careful because the new edition of the song had some sexual overtones. But back then, you know, conservative radio stations wasn't about playing songs about that. But Frankie Valli would later on say, yeah, this song is about Gaudio actually losing his virginity to his wife, Judy Parker, who helped write the song.
Oh, really? That's what it was about?
Yes.
Wow. Brady and I kind of had the right idea.
So the lead singer, who you hear in the first verse, I'm going to play it again here, who kicks everything off, and you can hear the drum beat. It's the drummer that I mentioned earlier, Jerry Pulsey. And then Frankie Valli comes in for the second verse. It was the Four Seasons' final song to reach number one, like I mentioned earlier. However, Valli, he did have another number one hit with the theme song to the movie Grease in 1978. So here's another interesting fact about the Four Seasons. So when this song, December 1963, went number one, the Four Seasons became the only artist in history to have a number one song before, during, and after the very long run at number one for the Beatles. The Beatles had 20 number one songs, but the Four Seasons, the only artist ever to have a number one before, during, and after the Beatles.
Yeah, I couldn't say that I've ever heard of the Four Seasons before. Nothing.
Also, apparently there was some bad timing because this song is supposed to be known as like a celebration song. December 1963 wasn't exactly a happy time for the United States because it was just a few days before that JFK was assassinated. November 22nd, 1963.
Wow. Well, yeah, but Mitch, that's not what the song is about.
No. Oh, no.
It's a big day for this gentleman, okay?
Yes, it's not exactly about somebody dying. It's really about somebody coming to life.
That's exactly right.
As a man.
How old was he?
Doesn't say. By the way, I had to change Frankie Valli's quote, by the way, of how he explained what the song was about. Don't think it became inappropriate.
Care to expand upon that?
it's a little dangerous. I'll have to tell you off air.
Really?
You can easily Google it.
Okay.
I mean, maybe to some it wouldn't be that bad, but to me, like, just the verbiage, people be like, all right, enough of this guy. Let's turn the channel. Can't let the children hear that.
Oh, we've got them suckered in. If they're already here, they're not turning away because of a I'm not trying to. Fine. Tell me during the break. That's okay. But I'm just saying, we've got them. You people that are still here listening, I know that we've got you. We've got you. And you're not going anywhere, no matter what happens during number one song of the day. Is that it? Anything else?
That's it, man. Good song. By the way, if you've never seen the movie Jersey Boys, watch it. It's a really good biopic about the Four Seasons.
Oh.
Really, it's about, I mean, it's a lot surrounding Frankie Valli and how much his voice was a game changer and how the ladies loved him.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure he had a lot of these nights.
Although, you're not going to know anything about this, John, but since you don't know anything about the Four Seasons, but just from that video or from the movie and what I've seen, Tommy DeVito was a character. That guy was not only a little bit dangerous, he was shady, and that is what rock and roll is all about.
I'm pretty sure I went to high school with Tommy DeVito. I think that's right.
Rest in peace, Tommy DeVito. If I remember correctly, he just passed away recently.
Okay. What was the guy from hung out with Bam Margera? Wasn't there a...
Yes. His uncle, Don Vito?
Don Vito, I think, or something like that.
He's not alive either.
Yeah, he's also no longer with us.
Don Vito, yeah.
Don Vito. Okay. I was thinking of Don Vito.
He died in 2015.
Oh, man, it's been that long? Wow. Shout out to Don Vito. Okay. Ask us anything's next. You told me you're leading this thing off. Go for it.
So our news director, Brandon Peoples, hooked us up with a question from last week, and that is, if you could teach the history of anything, what would you want to teach?
Well, I would say...
Kanye West.
Because of the importance... Yeah. Can you just let me explain it first? Because of the importance to the world that people do not realize. Like, you know, if I said I wanted to teach the history of America since 1860, like, whatever. Okay, like, people do value that information and think that it's important. I don't think the world values enough, because these days he's gone so far off the deep end, the contributions that Kanye has made to music and pop culture and society. And so because of said importance, also because it's just fascinating, his career arc and everything that's happened since he burst onto the scene, yes, I would like to teach the history of one Kanye West.
See, if you wanted to teach the history about somebody contributing to the world, I might instead want to go with his future ex-wife. My subject would obviously be is what I'm most knowledgeable about, which... It's probably a lot of useless knowledge, but it would be pro wrestling.
History of Bret Hart since 1983.
That would be a good subject. He would definitely be brought up, one of the greatest. But I would take it all the way back to, I'm talking the 19th century pro wrestling. Back when Abraham Lincoln used to tear it up at, like, fairgrounds. George Washington, believe it or not, go back even further, he was a wrestler. Got to go back to some of the OGs and then work your way into the 20th century.
Come again, George Washington was a wrestler?
He was. So was Ulysses S. Grant. He was a wrestler.
Are you sure this wasn't just that guy from The Office that comes in dressed like Ben Franklin in a George Washington suit flying off of a turnbuckle?
Pretty sure.
Okay.
I mean, if I could get in a time machine and go back and watch Abe Lincoln, you know, give everybody bionic elbows, and his finishing hold would probably be like choking somebody out with his top hat. Little crossface.
What's the most nervous you've ever been to do something in your life?
Just as of recent years, doing the first good for a Wildcat first down at the Oklahoma game. That was pretty nerve-wracking to do the first one.
That specific phrase, not just like being on the mic in general?
I know how important that phrase is at football games. It's just you get in your own head. You don't want to screw it up. I was pretty nervous. After the first
good
one.
For a while, you got here on the Cats.
Yeah. Again, we need to tag team this thing.
I think most nervous I've ever been in my life. I remember being very nervous when my friends in high school convinced me to go after wrestling for a year and like showing up to the first practice because like I knew I wasn't going to be good at it. Newsflash, I wasn't. I was not looking forward to what all of that would entail. I felt out of place, like just all those feelings that you get as like a high school kid. That's up there for most nervous I've ever been in my life. First time, I was pretty nervous the first time that I did TV.
That's nerve-wracking. I was very nervous meeting Bret Hart for the first time before WrestleMania 26, the day before, Phoenix, Arizona. I'm about to shake the hand of greatness. He was a really cool guy. People say don't meet your heroes. I've met mine twice.
Oh, very nervous the time that I was going in for the first kiss with the girl, who turned out to be my high school girlfriend. Real nervous about that one. A nice little highlight list there.
No confidence.